Let's look back at just a little bit so we can get some idea about this. In 1 Peter, the first chapter, I want you to look down at verse 2 where he says, the elect, according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, through sanctification of the Spirit unto obedience and the sprinkling of the blood of Jesus Christ, grace be unto you and peace be multiplied. So we are the elect, their sanctification, we're sprinkled through the blood of Christ. In verse 3, he talks about being reborn to a lively hope. In verse 4, he talks about the incorruptible inheritance that we have that is reserved in heaven for you, for me. Then he goes on in verse 5 and talks about that being kept by the power of God through the faith of salvation to come. Then he goes on in verses 6 through 9 where he talks about this great joy, inexpressible, full of glory. And in verse 10 through 12 where he talks about how we are a distinguished group of individuals. We are a group of people that have been given some blessings by God. Something that is immeasurable. Do you realize how special you are? And then he sums all this up. And then he uses a word that's very important to us. And I've tried to, anywhere I've taught, I want you to always look in verse 13 at this word. When you see it, he said something to make a point. In verse 13 where he says, wherefore. And when you see that wherefore, what does that mean? Because. He said all of this and puts it in the palms of your hands. And then he says something even more important. I've given you this, but I want you to do something with it. Every preacher I know has probably 10 to 12 sermons on verse 13, and we're going to teach all of them today in this class. You will see it because it's really simple. Look at verse 13, where Peter says, wherefore, gird up your loins, the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. I want you to think about that for just a moment. What's the impact that would come for all of us in that one passage? What does it mean to you? When we step back and we start looking at this passage and we start saying, you rest your hope fully on the grace that comes from God. What does that mean to you? The grace that comes from God, Paul spends a lengthy time in Ephesians chapters 1 and 2 building on that grace that comes. Gene?
Talking about your conscience and your dedication and what you have by principle. Jim?
I want to couple that with verse 12 of chapter 5. At the end of it, it says, this is a true grace of God. Stand firm in it. And I believe this is the theme, is to stand firm in the atmosphere around you, just like today, all the sin and that's around us. Stand firm in it, and the grace is going to get you through.
And you're going to see that beginning in verse 13 through the end of the book of Peter. He now takes the principal points of, you have been given all of this as a gift. All of this is yours. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to put it before you? With purpose of heart, you focus on the things that are so deliberate. Talking about his body. Look over in Romans chapter 12. Talking about my mind and my thoughts. When he says, this is what you need to be focused on, and you need to live this, and you need to think about your mind and your conscience, look at what he says at the beginning of this. In Romans chapter 12, and down in verses, in the beginning in verses 1 and 2, he says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your spiritual or reasonable service. And be not fashioned according to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Look what he says in verse 3. For I say, through the grace that was given me. This same grace that Paul writes to the Romans is what he's talking about, what Peter's talking about in 1 Peter. This same grace you have. So let's think about this exhortation that you rest in this. You rest your hope fully. The New American Standard says, be fixed, or fix your hope completely on the grace. Living our lives. How often do we step back and we need to reflect on this? On living my life for God. When we say daily, how do we start it? Because that's right, I agree with you. How do we start that so that we have this purpose within us that we start every day with the focus on the grace that's coming?
Chris did talk about one of his lessons about starting out glorifying God in the morning, starting out with your opening prayer, giving God all the glory, and building Him up who He is, and then start your day.
What is one of the single points that he is trying to make here? As we go through this, is there going to be some devastation that's going to happen to these people? Are they going to go through some turmoil? Are they going to be some people that are going to be put to death? Some people that are going to be abused, beaten because they believe in Christ? What is he telling them about this? We're just passing through. He uses another word in here. What does he call them? Sojourners. Even another version of the Bible even talks about them and uses the word exiles. You are put out from where you were because they don't want you. But who does? And as you're traveling through, he says, this is not their end. No matter what comes your way, the tragedies of life, what does it mean for you and me? This is not what we're here for. This life right now is just as we're going from to where we're going to. What's it mean? When tragedy strikes our family, where do we go and look for comfort? To God and to His Son. And then our family. We support each other. Because we have a common hope. And our hope is in the grace that comes from God. And we build that up as we fortify our hope. And we build these things within us so that we can strengthen one another. Because my troubles and my problems are not necessarily yours. But can my tragedies be? And those of you who have had some tragic moments, can you use that strength to help someone else? And I'm not even here trying to tell you that it's not painful, because I know that it is. But in those moments, what strength can you give someone else? So we can think about that. So the inheritance, remember in verse 4 of chapter 1, he said, this is reserved for you. This is our hope, the grace that is brought to you through the revelation of Jesus Christ. This revelation, when he talks about the revelation that's to come, what's he talking about? The revelation that you will see in Jesus Christ later. What's he mean? When Jesus Christ will be revealed to us later. I'm sorry? The resurrection. When he comes back, when he's talking about those pieces. Do they know Jesus now? They know what's here. Some of them may have seen him while he walked upon the earth. But even if they didn't, can they know him now? Through his word. And as he's building this case right here, he says, look, guys, here it is. In John chapter 20, when he's talking to Thomas, and there were those there that had seen him, his other brothers, he tells them very firmly, you believe because you have what? You've seen. You were able, Thomas, to put your hands in my side, in the holes, and you've seen me, now you believe. Be not faithless. Blessed are those who believe but have not seen. What are they basing it on? What are they basing this belief of Jesus Christ on? Okay, the things that they have heard. Faith. How many of you have been to Paris, Italy, not Paris, Texas? How many? One. Germany, were you there? You didn't go to Paris? Just a few of you. So is there an Eiffel Tower? I'm Paris, France. Yeah, right. You're right. Okay, you're right. Where's Chris when you need him? Of course it's in Paris, France. See, some of y'all were going right with me. You ought to have believed it was there. And then, great, there's one there too. But you've never seen it. One, two, three, maybe. Four, five. You've never seen it. Believe it's there. But you take it on faith. You see it. What testimony has been laid out for us that we can see Jesus? And can we see the grace that's going to come? The faith that we have is based upon facts and things that can be proven. And how much closer are we drawing? And that's what he wants them to see. Even if you never saw him, the praise, the honor, the glory from verse 7 will be yours. End of your faith. The all in all in verse 9 is the salvation of you. That's the end product. That's the glory that you're looking for. It's not about you. It's in this peace. But he says something else in this verse, and I've got to be real careful so I don't spend too much more time on this. He says, wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind. What does that mean? You gird it up. No. Nope.
Two minds. There's a carnal and there's a spiritual. And when he's saying gird up the loins of your mind, he's talking about the spiritual mind, the Godward mind. And the way we gird that up is we study the Word and we apply the Word. That's the only, that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. So if we take that power and we use it, we're girding up the loins of our mind, and we are, our faith is growing as we go along. The more we do that, the stronger it gets. And we're repressing that carnal mind. We can use our mind to be a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever, but when you get down to the basics, beyond what we're learning to do and all, there are just two minds, a Godly right. mind and a carnal mind.
Very good. Exactly right. Dan?
If you think about the times when they would have girded up their loins, that was, if they were going to run a race or if they had to run a long distance or if they had to go to battle, they would do that as preparation. So it's almost as if he's saying in another way, get ready for battle, be prepared to act.
Well, they would dress.
They wore these long robes, and that was exactly what you talk about. Peter, as he would gird himself up when he was on the boat, as he would be fishing. So you would gird it up so that you're able to move about freely. But you're ready for battle, and you're ready to protect, and you're ready to be protective of what it is. So he tells them, you gird up the loins of your mind. And then he says something else, be sober. What does that mean? Be sober. Discipline, watchful. You know this term is used predominantly in two other passages, in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and in Titus chapter 1. Who's he talking to in those passages? Talking to elders. Why do they need to be vigilant, watchful? Because you've got a lot of folks. And Satan is. And he is looking. If you're not watching, you will miss the sign that he's getting close. So he tells them, you be sober, you be vigilant. But then as he's talking about this, he goes on, set your focus on these things. Put them on the right things, on the hope that's there. Don't worry about the fears. Look over in Matthew chapter 6. In Matthew 6 down in verse 25. What is the point that's made here when he says, what is the point that he makes in Matthew 6 and verse 25? He says, therefore I say unto you, Be not anxious for your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body what you shall put on. Is not the life more than food, and the body more than raiment? What's he talking about in this passage? And I just picked one of the verses, but there's more in here. What's he trying to get us to see? All right, God will take care of it. That's right. The faith that should be where? In Christ. It should be in God. He's not saying don't go and sit down and do nothing. What's he want us to? Where does he want us to put our attention? Exactly. My devotion and my thought is towards God and looking to Him. Be on guard. Don't let fear come and take you. So the things that might dissuade us or move us from this. Think about this. Let's go over to Luke chapter 21. I want you to look at this, and then we're going to get off this point, and we're going to move on. Oh, I will never get off this point. Luke 21. I want you to look over in Luke chapter 21. Look at verses 34 and verse 35, where he says this, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, so that day comes upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth." In those two verses, what's he telling us? Surfeiting means carousing. So if you have another version that says something else. So don't, all these things that are out there and drunkenness and those things that cares of the world, what's he telling us? What does he say in the next verse then? What does he say in verse 35? Okay. Jonathan, you... If they can sneak in, that's what he wants to do. If he can come in covert, that's what he wants. Jenny? All right, in verse 35 at the very beginning of this, and when he says, "Watch ye therefore and pray always." Where's my focus? Where's my daily, where's my morning start? Where's my evening end? Where's my life begin and stop? What am I looking for as I'm living through this life? When things are going well, what do? Forget about what? What do you mean by that? Okay, so so just go ahead and make my point for me. Keep on going. Because that's exactly right. When things are going well, what do? We just keep on going. When things are going poorly, what do? We come back and say, "God, I need you." What should we do? Every morning, every night should be the same thing, whether they're good or bad. What did Job say? The things that came from God were... blessings, blessed be the Lord, it's all taken away from me, so now what? Well, I'll just go ahead and sin and die, right? No. He said, "Blessed be the name of the Lord." It's still the impact that's there. We have to keep focusing. All right, anybody else have anything else to say before I go on? Because I will spend the rest of this class doing this.
There's one thing about old age that is really good.
I have no idea what you're talking about. If you're pointing at me, then stop.
But as you have problems in life, and they just seem to overwhelm us, and we just, you know, like, what are we going to do? But when you look back on that time, you see where God got you through it. And even though at that time, when you're going through it, it just lasts forever. You feel like it's just going to never quit, but it does. Okay. And you can see him so clearly.
That's good. Now, I asked my mom a question not long about that. I said, "Tell me one of the worst things I ever did." She said, "I can't remember anything." I said, I don't know if that's old age. Were you forgotten? Or are you just, that's not important. We got it. We got through it. And we're going to move on. Jonathan?
This is so applicable to us today because in times of peace, like you said, we relax. We kind of let our guard down. He's telling them, because more than likely they're in a time of peace too. They're not being persecuted heavily. And he's telling them, you need to change your mind. Change what you're doing right now, because it's coming. And for us today, you know, we never know. You could say we're in time of peace. We're not being heavily persecuted right now. In my lifetime, will it ever get to that point where we are? It may not, but it might. And I better be prepared for it. Well, and I better prepare my kids for it. It may never happen, but it might. And I better be ready.
And some of the most dangerous ground to walk on is when we're not in direct conflict, because we do let our guard down.
Just to remind us to count your blessings every single day. And if you do that, then you have to focus on God, because our blessings can't come from
anywhere else. That's exactly right. Well said. And that's what we have to do, is focus on the things that are important. All right, anyone else? One last second. Going. Oh, okay.
Just one last thing.
You got 3 seconds from me on. If I get in trouble for this, it's your fault.
All these problems of life. The thing we don't realize when we're having those problems, so many times, is those problems are actually a blessing. And when we come through it, right, on the other side, we look back and we're a better person than we were before we jumped in.
That's exactly right. And the troubles and the trials that we go through, the situations that we will face, they will grow us and make us stronger. So we'll come to that hurdle, and we'll either overcome the hurdle or we'll succumb to it. But it will be a defining point. Going on, no more comments. Hold them to yourself, write them down, read them later. Let's look over to verse 14. Verse 14. We're going to read verses 14 down through verse 21. This is what we're going to spend the rest of our time, because now he's made the transition, and he said, this is what it was. This is what you've been given. These are the gifts that are there. You need to focus intently on this, heaven. You need to focus intently on the grace that was given to you. And as little children, and this is a verse I would go to with my kids, and I'd say, as obedient children, period. Don't worry about anything else. Just do that part. Just be obedient. But what? Doing what? Look at what he says in verse 14 through 21. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts of your ignorance, but as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation. Because it is written, be ye holy, for I am holy. And if ye call on the Father, who without respect of persons judges according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. For as much as ye have, that ye were not redeemed with corruptible things, as silver and gold, from your vain conversation, and the word conversation means from your life, received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of the Lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last days for you, who by him do believe in God, that raised him up from the dead and gave him glory, that your faith and hope might be in God. So let's just talk about that just for a little bit. When we think about as obedient children, who establishes the rules in your house? Or some of you that are old, as she said, not me, she said it. Who established those rules? Who established law and order in your home? Don't be chicken on this now. That's not that time. Dad did. Dad established them. Whose responsibility is it? Dad's responsibility. Where does mom fall into this picture? She enforces the law. Okay, I don't know that I ought to put it that way, but yeah, okay. There's a number 8 iron skillet that works real well. Number 8, because it's easier to swing. That number 12 is a little heavy. But what is the point? Why is it so important that the dad lays out the pieces that are there? Why is it important that he is the person?
That God put
Okay? And we can see that. Who in Ephesians chapter 6 is told, you need to do this with your children? Did he say moms do this?
No.
He said fathers do this. So is it important that mom and dad agree? Why is that so difficult? Okay, I don't want to get into your family secrets though.
Children pick up very quickly on a divided house, and okay. They're going to go to the parent that they think can change dad's mind.
So you mean to tell me that when dad says no, that children go to mom?
Oh yes.
Did they do that?
Or vice versa.
They did do that. And what did you tell them? Go back to dad? Good point. I like that. But why does he say, why is it laid out like that? That you always have this point. And we're going to talk about this more in the sermon this morning. But why is it so important to have the point where you go back to? For authority, for answers, for anything. Why is it?
Well, you have to have a point of reference on how to conduct yourself.
Okay.
I was just thinking about this is not the author of confusion and chaos, and there has to be structure. There's structure in the church, and there's structure in the home, and he set it up that way.
Good point.
And when they become adults, they need a place to go to, and that's going to be the Word. So God sets a pattern, and then fathers follow it, and they need to know that when they become father, there's a pattern for them as well.
Now, is that when we read about in Proverbs, it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Is that an absolute? It is not an absolute. So when you look at this, what is he trying to get you to say? What does he want me as a parent to see? What does he want us as a government to see? When you have the rules and the structure in place, you have a point of reference to go back to, so you know that when things start to go awry, you know you've got a place to go and start your structure all over again if you have to. Hopefully you don't. Just like Ecclesiastes writes in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1, remember thy creator in the days of thy youth. If you don't have that odd baggage in your life, you don't have to take it out. Don't let it get in. So when we think about us, let's look at some other things about this. Obedient children. The lives that we live. The word conform. To conform to oneself, to live and build ourselves. Talking about this in Romans chapter 12, we've already read about this. The renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. If I do this, and I make my mind set wholly upon God, what is going to come out of that? I focus truly on this word. And are all the answers to the world in this book? Every answer I need is in here. Now we say that. Is it specific? Did God lay out every law? Thou shalt not do this, and thou shalt not do that, and thou shalt not do that. We couldn't read it all. You couldn't carry it in here. What did he lay out? Things that we should do. A moral compass. Heard something else in the back.
What you needed, he gave us full instruction what to do, complete, no worries.
So when I said to my father, hey, I'm going over to Jeff's house, and I went to Jeff's house and said, hey, Jeff, how you doing? And then I went over to John's house, who he didn't want me hanging out with. Did I go to Jeff's house like I said? Yes, I did. What was my intent? My intent was to go to John's house, and he said, you stay away from John. Now, I don't know why he didn't like John. I think he didn't like his daddy Jimmy. But I don't know why that would be an issue. But even then, what we have to think about is, what is my intent? And God laid out, here is what you should be doing. And what do we as people want to do? We want to say, okay, I am doing that.
Rebel against authority.
But is that really our nature? Is that just, I want to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it, and where?
Most of the Old Testament is the story of selfishness.
So the focus of that, Brother Noble?
The thing we need to keep in mind is we think we're mature, but we're all children still. And God has laid out the rules. He's given us rules to live by and to guide us and shepherd us. And as his children, if we follow those, we are growing. We're growing. We'll never fully mature. But if we're obedient children, we can be either rebellious or we can be obedient. But we're not mature. We're to do our own thing. We're not. If we do that, we're going to wind up where we shouldn't be.
So if we're not following the pattern, then we are in rebellion. Richard?
When we become obedient children, we begin to change our life. We walk a more holy life. And that will help us to guide the direction of where we're going. And we shouldn't look back on where we've been, but where we're going to go.
Okay, so the popularity of the things of this world are not nearly as important. And so Christians need to heed the writings that we can read in other places too. And what is popular is not always what is best. We need to focus it. Look over in the book of 1 John. Did I miss someone else's hand? Why don't you look at 1 John. 1 John chapter 2. Down in verse 15. First John chapter 2. Hey, right. I knew that wasn't reading right. Chapter 2, down in verse 15, when he says, "Love not the world, neither the things of the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, the vainglory or pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." Did he tell us everything we need to do in just those three verses? The focus is not here. The focus is elsewhere. And if I let those things in and take over, they will go on. All right, let's go a little further. Let's go down a little bit more. Because he then tells us some things, and I want to get to a couple of points here that we make. What time am I supposed to quit? 40? Okay. So I got 5 minutes to get to this. All right. He says down here, and he says, in verse 15, "But as he hath called us, you called you is holy. Be ye holy in all manner of conversations, because it is written, be ye holy, for I am holy." Does anyone know where that's written? Don't look at your side margin. If you got a point, does anyone know where that is, where it's written that says, "Be ye holy, for he is holy"?
Leviticus.
Three times in Leviticus. What was he trying to get them to understand in Leviticus when he's writing all of every one of these points?
Wait, what? Be sanctified.
You hold yourself in a special place. God is holy and he's expecting you to be. That's it. So if it's outside those boundaries, don't do it. In Galatians chapter 5, when Paul's reading all these things, the works of the flesh, and he says, "Do not do these things." Yada, 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 yada. And what does he say at the end of it? Such like. Those things that look like that, get away from it. Do I have to list everything? Because you know as soon as I list everything, something else is going to come about that I didn't list. So if it doesn't appear to be holy and righteous before God, don't go. That's what he wants us to see. Abstain, and he writes over to those in Thessalonica, abstain from all appearances of sin, of unrighteousness. That's my life, and it should be dedicated that way. Even then, he also talks about it over in Matthew chapter 5, where he talks about the same kind of thing about God being perfect, complete. That's where you focus, and you move towards it. Ben?
Child doesn't understand what a second-degree burn is and the ramifications of that. You tell your kid, don't play in the street. child doesn't understand what's going to happen when a car runs over them, but yet you spank them, they're just supposed to obey. That's an obedient child. Same thing with our relationship with God. We don't understand. We don't have the wisdom God has. So we should have that same attitude toward Him, that we're not questioning everything that He requires us to do. We do it because He says to do it, because He's the Father and He's wise, and we're not.
The point is valid is when we're looking at
how He has given so much for us and has set out and dictated the pathway. He said, here's the plan. You need to follow the plan. Anyone else? Okay, let's look a little further. I want you to go down with me now, if you would look at the desire. I want you to go over to Ephesians chapter 5, and let's talk about, it is also Jesus' desire that we be holy, and that He died for a special purpose, that we are holy. In Ephesians chapter 5, I want you to look down with me, down in verse 25. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25, where after He has said the most important thing in verse 22, wives be subjected unto your own husbands, period. He goes down to verse 25 and He says this, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself up for it, that He might sanctify it, having cleansed it by the washing of water with the word. Now that this piece that is here, that He's writing this, He says there is a purpose that He established. Jesus came and died so that the church would be holy. Who's responsible to keep this local congregation holy? All right.
And the members.
Okay, I was wondering if you're going to go there. Because I was, if you weren't. So the elders have a responsibility to oversee all the pieces that are there. The minister play a part in this?
Does Chris Emerson play a part in that? He does. All right, quit saying everyone because I'm trying to narrow this down. I'm trying to get a focus. But you're exactly right. So when we start, we categorize this. So we've got the elders, then we've got the preacher, then we've got the deacons, then we've got the members. No. You won't read that in Ephesians chapter 4. What you're going to read is everyone has different roles. But we're all people. You won't see that, I'm not going to tell you where, I'll tell you later. About 35 minutes. But you see in this that it's a body of people come together for the express purpose of what? Why do we come together and meet? To serve God. Not even thinking about this, but what else? Why do we come and meet here? To help each other. To support each other. What if you have to have a difficult conversation with Ken Vaughn on something that he did? I hope you do it. Who said that? Thank you. Say it again, louder. If we've built a relationship that is founded on the principles that Christ and God have built and set it out and laid it out, how much easier it is to walk in and say, Ken, I need to talk to you about this. How easy was it for Paul in Galatians chapter 2 when he withstood Peter to the face? Whew. Who in here would have done that? Because it's a difficult thing. But when it's right, it's right. And what was the intent behind it? To take Peter down? To lift Peter up so that Peter could lift up the brethren together. The one thing that was causing division in the church was a separation of Jew and Gentile. Paul says, you can't afford that. We can't afford that. The focus of all of us is not on the pretty people. It's not on the elegant, not on the rich, not on those who outwardly adorn, but the focus is upon each and every soul because all are beautiful. Any last one comment? Anyone have one thing or they got 5 seconds to say it? All right. Thank you. We'll pick some of this up on Wednesday night.